This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1.
This is The Other Side of the News. I'm Bob Fetrakis here in the studio at 1021 East Broad Street, and privileged to have my old friend and colleague, and not just in the newspaper business, but in radio, Michael Allwood, in the studio. Welcome, Michael.
Thanks for having me, Robert. It's always a pleasure to be with you and with Suzanne.
And just to enlighten our listeners, Michael, for many years was in radio and was on WVKO, particularly in those key election years of 2008 and 2012, doing a show, some of you may recall, The Blue State Diner.
Yes, yes indeed. In fact, we're going to talk a little bit later. I want to just go back to 2008 a little bit. In fact, I'm going to go back a little bit farther in time to talk about something when we start talking about the Republicans and how they're relating to Hillary Clinton these days and have been for quite some time. The history of the Republican vitriol over Hillary goes back to 93 at least. So those people who are surprised at some of the rhetoric coming out of the Republicans about Hillary Clinton should come as no surprise to anybody who's been paying attention over the years, especially during those key election years. Back in 2008, I recall, just to put a little shading on this, Sean Hannity's radio show had a subtitle to it, and it was the Stop Hillary Express. And it turned out it took more than Sean Hannity to stop Hillary. It took Barack Obama. But the vitriol has also moved over to Barack Obama. And, well, let's talk about that a little bit later. But let me start by saying that whatever the outcome in both the GOP and the Democratic Party, whatever the outcome in the nominating process, we are in for an absolutely historic presidential election cycle.
And are you wishing you were doing regular commentary? It's so strange. It appears that the outliers, I mean, people who would never do well in American politics, if we weren't in some tremendous breakthrough period that we still don't understand, but a Donald Trump on the right, reflecting in my perspective and that of other political scientists, authoritarian nationalism, and of course Bernie Sanders, Democratic Socialism.
I think that would be the most extraordinary matchup, and
in the history of the United States.
You have an outsider, not really a Republican, running on the GOP,
and one that appears to be wrecking the Republican Party.
Right, and another outsider who's not really a Democrat.
Independent, right. Democratic Socialist.
Right, so, I mean, that would be a first in American history, a person, an outsider Republican and an outsider Democrat running against one another. And let's say Bernie doesn't get the nomination, then Hillary does. We'll have the first woman to lead a presidential ticket. And then whoever the GOP nominee is would also be a first, an historic first. So no matter the outcome of these nominating processes, we're going to have an historic election cycle.
Yeah, because if Ted Cruz goes forward, he'd be the first Tea Party president, and he'd be the insider, but in reality, Cruz is an outsider.
He's an outsider.
Who was tremendously hated in his own party and in the Senate until Donald Trump came along, and now they're talking about him as an insider option when he's clearly not an insider.
He's absolutely not just a Tea Party Republican. He's a serious Christian, and the born-again type Christian Republican, and one who states that basically he would govern according to biblical tenet.
The Sermon on the Mount, is he a democratic socialism? Oh, I forget. He's a right-wing Christian, which means that you ignore the Sermon on the Mount and you go with the parable of the talents and you make the corporate Jesus. The
right.
Corporate Jesus is the one to follow, a CEO with 12 apostles as board members.
That's right. And God forbid what kind of Supreme Court nominees a Ted Cruz could come up with.
Yeah, we would be longing for the days of Scalia.
Yeah. By the way, I meant to mention this right up at the top, but got sidetracked, which is my want. But I was coming past Franklin Park on my way in,
mm-hmm.
and wondered what the hell was going on. And then I happened to be listening to 610, and you know what their policies and politics are. Turns out John Kasich was down there.
Oh, at Franklin Park?
Yeah, and I didn't know that, but apparently that's what was going on at Franklin
Park. An actual sighting of the governor in the state?
Well, apparently, and in the capital city, of all things.
Was he selling pot as Roger Stone, associate of Donald Trump, accused him of being the man in the 76 election for the field workers for Ronald Reagan, that he got fired from the campaign for selling pot?
I don't know if it's the same John Kasich or not. But
oh, well, first good thing I'd ever heard about him. That he was the man.
Speaking of which, I also heard on the radio that Nancy Reagan has passed at the age of 94.
Well, Nancy, or Queen Nancy, actually had a brief reign there as President of the United States. Her husband, of course, was sequestered upstairs in the White House by Donald Reagan, who sort of acted like he was a prime minister. And Nancy went back, dusted Ronnie off, went down, and also tried to get him a Nobel Peace Prize, pushed the talks to reduce nuclear weapons in the world. So she actually was one of our most progressive presidents, and she hated the born-again Christians. She hated the right wing of the Republican Party and actually called them extra chromosome Republicans.
And she also probably got that from her astrologer, who she consulted on a regular basis.
And again, better the astrologer than some of those right-wing neoconservatives that were first hanging out around Ronald Reagan.
Dick Cheney, I believe, was among them.
He was, and got progressively worse and became a full-blown neocon there. And
about as full-blown as you can get, and
yeah.
You know, pardon the pun, blowing your friend's face off in a shooting incident.
Yeah, what is this quail hunting in Texas? I would avoid it.
Yeah.
Cheney goes down there and shoots his friend, an attorney, and supposedly that's what Scalia was doing down there.
Really?
Quail hunting.
Have you ever seen Lewis Black's skit about Dick Cheney and the quail hunting?
No.
It's I won't even try to duplicate it, but if you ever get the chance to see it, it's hilarious. And first of all, he makes fun of the very idea of hunting quail. They're just on the ground and just shoot them. It's not really hunting.
Not really one of the better sports.
Let's jump forward a little bit and talk about something very recent, and that being the recent Republican presidential debate. Four people, the field has been now whittled down to just four, with, of course, the Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and the aforementioned John Kasich. And I have a question for you, Robert.
Well, before you ask me, I couldn't help but notice you have large hands.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes.
Well, my question is this. What sort of triumvirate of nitwittery, what trio of chowderheads must you assemble in order for you...
What triage of tomfoolery?
Yes. Must you assemble in a room to make John Kasich look like the normal adult, the wise, the voice of reason in the room?
No, it is quite startling is that Kasich is the grown-up.
Right.
And he's just acting like a normal
reasonable politician.
He's doing policy. What John Kasich is actually doing is public policy. We're clearly now in a post-constitutional and post-policy America, at least with the Republican Party, where actual policies don't matter. What seems to matter is bullying, name-calling, denigrating the opposition, and sound bites that are, you know, absolutely ridiculous.
They are, but while he seems to be the reasonable adult in the room when compared to those other three nitwits, he's clearly polishing the turd that is his administration in the state of Ohio. He has trumped up his record in Ohio as something that it clearly has not been. And in so doing, he's really, not like all the others aren't, but he's misleading the American people. And this should, if for some reason he should be the nominee, and I doubt that's possible, but I do not doubt that he might be someone else's running mate.
Yeah, he is a possible VP, and that has been mentioned.
Even though he has said
he's not. Cruz Kasich ticket or a Rubio Kasich ticket.
Right, but he's not been mentioned as a possible running mate for Trump. However, if Trump has wise political advisors, I think that would be a wise choice for a Republican. One that I really wouldn't want to see, but...
Yeah, I'm wondering if Kasich would run with a man who in many ways seems to be destroying the modern Republican Party, a corporatist, born-again Christian party, by really being all over the map, very reactionary policies on immigration. But on the other hand, he's for single payer, which is as far left as you can go on health care in American politics. And as a businessman, he says it works and makes sense. And he's absolutely right. You save a ton of money in administrative cost with single payer. So half of Trump's positions are similar to Bernie Sanders and to the left of Hillary Clinton. And then his social issues, you know, not speaking on David Duke and the Klan, are ludicrously to the far right.
And you mentioned, like, the single payer. Do you remember we had a conversation, I believe, it must have been 2012, but when was the big bailout for the auto companies? Was that?
Well, that was, again, in 2008.
In 8. Okay, let's go back to a conversation we had then. Why aren't the automakers calling for a single payer healthcare system?
Yeah, because it'll save them $5,000 a car.
Right.
Yeah, they won't have to pay for healthcare.
When they got called up to Capitol Hill and made the mistake the first time of each taking their own private jet.
Right, correct.
I asked then, why aren't they demanding this? It would be good for their business.
Sure, because other countries, Japan, South Korea, Canada, the automakers there have a tremendous advantage because they're not paying health care costs for their workers.
Right. And so it doesn't make sense. So it tells us, of course, that these CEOs are in bed with the people on Capitol Hill.
to keep the status quo the way it is. They are aligned with Big Pharma and the insurance companies. They have to be.
This is WCRS 98.3, 102.1. I'm speaking with Michael Allwood, the managing editor of the Columbus Free Press. And if you look at the new issue, you will see the rebirth of Buckeye Socialism. Bernie Sanders on the cover. We're a little more than a week out from the historic 2016 primary on March 15th. Any thoughts or predictions on what might happen that day, Michael?
It's difficult to say. I think that Kasich's base in Ohio is strong enough.
Should Trump?
To do that in Ohio. What difference that will make in the overall scheme of things it remains to be seen. But I think he has enough within the Republican base to get that done.
And hasn't won anything yet. He hasn't won any states yet. A few second place finishes.
I think two. But I'm not positive about you.
Yeah, Vermont was one.
Yeah. On the other hand, in the Democratic primary, I think that Hillary has enough strength in her Democratic base to get it done.
And really, you mean her black base, which is the only thing saving her. I mean, she's literally winning essentially Republican states in the South with large black population.
True, but also women. I mean, they're still...
Well, the women versus the young, I mean, and with the white males going for Bernie, you know, she's got... there's been some erosions in that base where you really see, I mean, she's winning that demographic, but at nowhere near the level. I mean, a little higher among middle-aged white professional women, but where she's really beating Bernie Sanders is among the black population. And I've argued that's the one that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Her husband massively increased federal drug crimes, did nothing to stop the powdered cocaine being treated much differently.
More leniently.
Than crack cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
And 100,000 police on the street that mainly rounded up people
of color.
In inner city, the NAFTA trade agreement. So and again, even as Secretary of State, you've got her, you know, attacking Libya, expanding the war in the Middle East. So I'm really surprised that her brand is so comfortable and that black voters are so loyal to her.
Well, I'm going to harken back to 2008 again, and that I can remember speaking to different organizations about what was going on within the party and all the butthurt middle-aged white women over Hillary. They were so angry that Barack Obama was getting such support, and they were so angry about it that they were so much in favor of Hillary. And I know that some of that sentiment still exists. It's carried over since 2008. And so people find it hard to change their minds. They find it very hard to change their minds. When they get politically aligned with someone, they tend to stick with them unless they do something horribly wrong. And that would mean something more dastardly than having some controversial email situation, which, by the way, as political scandals go, that's pretty weak tea, this business with email and trying to stir up a hornet's nest over an email account. That's digging, that's reaching, that's just stirring up muck for the sake of stirring it up.
Well, what they really want to get at, and which is the real issue, was the explanation that made no sense, that there was an old video on the internet of a badly made Islamophobic movie and they won't attack it directly. They'll attack her email, but they won't attack what was happening with the death of the ambassador, but really the so-called American envoys and diplomatic officials who were in fact really interrogating people at that U.S. complex in Benghazi. So there's sort of an agreement. You don't talk about the fact that we use our embassies and certain embassy properties to torture people. Instead, it's like, what about your email?
Yeah.
I mean, so they hope that erupts, but there appears to be an agreement that you don't kind of raise those issues about U.S. foreign policy, the real way that
right. What they're hoping to find is a confession that she actually murdered Vince Foster. That's what they're hoping to find in there. And I want to go back to something I briefly mentioned at the top of the show, and that is this just unbelievable vitriol within the Republican Party for Hillary Clinton.
And now, some of them may end up sitting out or voting for. Did you hear her comment? What was the great line? Is sort of jokers to the left of me, clowns to the right. You're stuck in the middle with me. Because a lot of them were pledging they weren't going to vote for Trump.
Right.
And if he's running against Hillary, either they sit it out or hold their nose and vote for.
Yeah, but, this I said earlier that that anybody who's surprised by the way the Republicans talk about Hillary, they act as if, they talk as if that Hillary presidency would be the seventh sign of the apocalypse and just be the ruination of our country.
From their perspective, it may, because it's really the ascendancy of an upper middle class, professional, beltway woman, and by being elected president,
Midwestern,
it would say this is the changing of the guard. You know, the women's movement of the 60s has finally reached its highest political apex.
Well, she first raised their hackles back in 93 when her husband Bill put her at the head of the committee or whatever, the focus
policy group
to get us that health care system for all. That's what they were going to implement, and Hillary was in charge of it, and she became the devil's number one imp at that moment in the eyes of the Republicans.
And previously she'd gotten in trouble during the campaign by saying she wasn't going to be the kind of first lady that served tea and cookies.
Right. And
then symbolically, she had to do a photo op and serve tea and cookies because it was such, and it's ridiculous, but there was such an outrage among the right in the country.
Rush Limbaugh, most importantly, Rush Limbaugh.
Minister of Propaganda, Herr Limbaugh.
Yes.
Raised that issue correctly.
And also, the perpetrator of the Vince Foster rumors came from
I was never clear on the Vince Foster stuff. I thought they were lovers, and Bill, the story never really made a whole hell of a lot of sense.
Almost no sense.
All the better to perpetrate it.
Yes. So, and like I said, during that, that debate, every time one of them spoke about Hillary, they kept claiming, "I'm the one who can beat Hillary." This is their claim to fame. I'm the one who can beat Hillary. And the other remarkable thing out of that debate was the way that Donald Trump talked to the other candidates, in particular Marco Rubio, who he several times referred to as Little Marco. Now, what kind of psychological bullying is that.
Yeah, it is bullying. It's sort of absurd. You've got Marco responding by talking about Trump's hand size. But there's been all sorts of firsts.
Yeah, but the comeback, Trump's comeback for that is also a first, I believe, in American politics. In my memory is when Trump said, you know, my hands are fine, and you can make of that what you will, as if to say, my penis is huge, don't worry about it.
Well, the interesting point there is that it's probably not the first. It's the first going public. But there were all sorts of reports that literally Lyndon Johnson used to carry around a tape measure or demand a tape measure because he referred to his organ as, quote, big jumbo, end quote. Claim he got more sex accidentally than the Kennedy boys did by being set up by that Frank Sinatra.
And Lyndon Johnson also had the habit of, if he was in consultation with somebody, he would drag them into the John while he did his business and kept talking to them.
And we're not talking about simple urination here.
No, we're not.
And again, yeah, a lot of those people, Robert Caro in his biography, that felt that that related to power.
Right.
An earthy man. But
And go back to...
But they did it in private. Now all this stuff that used to be idle gossip for presidential biographers
is being televised.
Yeah, live.
Yes.
And you're thinking, how far can this, degenerate? Trump essentially started off by, you know, calling Mexicans rapists.
Right. And now think about, here's something else I would like to think about, and that is, if Donald Trump becomes the nominee, it essentially tears a key plank from the GOP platform, that being family values. How you could parade the family values issue out to the public when you're on your third marriage.
And also suggesting that your daughter's so good looking, if you weren't her father, you might want to know her in a biblical sense.
Right. And plus, you know, his last two wives have been, quote unquote, trophy wives.
And of course, I forget how many of his wives have been immigrants, so to speak.
At least two.
Two. We don't know if all three, but at least two of them.
Right.
So yeah, now, everything he says seems to be designed to provoke a soundbite. It's infotainment. And it really reminds me of wrestling. It's like Worldwide Wrestling Federation.
I very good analogy, and it makes me think about this. And I certainly hope that whoever emerges between Hillary and Bernie on the Democratic side, that they remind the American public of this, that Donald Trump is a foreign affairs nightmare in the making. He could destroy diplomatic relations with any given country at any given moment.
Well, just think, they debated in the British Parliament whether to ban him from the soil of Great Britain. They actually had a parliamentary debate, and he's a candidate. He's not even the president. So as a candidate, it's unprecedented. They debated whether or not to ban Donald Trump. All right, let's wrap up here. Looks like we've got 1 minute left. Any last thoughts, Michael?
I don't have to ask you. I know that you are, like myself, are more politically aligned with Bernie Sanders.
Absolutely.
Than with Hillary. But I'm curious of whether or not Sanders can run a strong enough campaign. What's your thoughts?
Well, he's raising unprecedented money, you know, $3 million,
$5 million. From grassroots.
Yeah, at $27 and then $33. But I think he can. After all, he won Kansas, the great predictor of presidents. That's it from the other side of the news. Thanks, Michael.
Glad to be here.